He's awake to answer it. last time I got that, he was soundly asleep after having given his part.
Are you saying that non-mathematical topics put JJ to sleep?
It could be. So I'm going to present on aliasing and sample rate conversion examples, and at the end JJ will help with that a little bit. But before we get into that, here's the overview. I'm going to do a loose visual analogy. I understand the vision systems and the audio systems are quite different, but I want to have a visual that anybody who takes this slide deck away can use it when they're having this very same discussion with whoever it is they're having to deal with on incremental degradation of a project, of a design, of an audio system. It applies to all of those things, and I want to walk you through that before we get into the aliasing demonstration, filter types, and the sample rate examples, sample rate conversion examples. So, that said, loose visual analogy. Remember, the human auditory system does not work the same as the visual system. I know that, but this is just to get you the concept of incremental degradation. So we got here a nice picture. It's a visitor to my backyard, and we've taken a picture. It's pretty clear. Okay, for some reason, before we can present this to wherever it's the end result's got to be there, it's got to pass through some sort of a thing. Maybe we got to put a glass frame in front of it or something. Use your imagination. The whole point is somebody says we've got to not do things as well as we would like to do it. We're going to have to do something that we all know is going to cause a little degradation. Maybe it's one or more sample rate conversions for that matter. So we're asked to accept a slightly degraded result, and there it is. Did you see much of a difference? That wasn't too bad. We didn't lose too much. Okay, something else comes along, the project says we can't afford that equipment that you wanted, we're going to have to accept a lower grade brand, so we're going to have to accept another level of degradation. Oh, there it is. Everybody see that? Oh, this wasn't much difference than the last one. Here we do it again. We've been pushed one more time. The budget really got trashed, and so we've got to accept something much lower than what we had before.
What's your competitor's phone number now?
Yeah. Is that because I'm looking for a job there?
I can tell.
So now, if you remember where we started from, and we'll get back to that in a minute, incrementally, each step has not looked that much worse than the previous step. And finally, we get the last straw, and somebody says, we got to do it again. And there we are. We've gone through several steps of degradation. Maybe now, instead of getting those nice Meyer speakers we're going to put in, we're going to accept Phonic for the bar. And, this is the end result. Now, each step of the way, you are able to justify to yourself or your manager or whoever that you dealt with. I deal with corporate, so I always think about managers. And managers are always honest about getting things done for the least amount of money possible in the fastest time. And we talk ourselves regularly into this kind of thing. And so when you're doing processes maybe in audio and you're going through a number of filters and you're accepting just a little worse result every step of the way, you can talk yourself into this, which is a far cry from where you started out. And in the big picture here, that didn't look so bad. So let's take that first one and the last one, the second to last, the most degraded, and look at them up close. This was where we started out. This is the quality that we wanted to present. But we talked ourselves into allowing ourselves to do that. And, yeah, there's a few people in this room that can take your audio result that looks like that and actually turn it into something usable. One person here has written books on that. Steve Turnage, thank you for cleaning some stuff up. I know you do it for a lot of folks. So in this case, maybe we set out to do sound in a venue, and we were going to put in the first rate everything, and there's more than one person here can relate to this. And we got talked into lesser equipment, maybe not as good treatments on there. And we were willing to accept this, but along the way, the venue says, I really can't put the speakers where you want them. I can't, and we got to cut the cost some more. And by the time everybody's had their hand into degrading it, we end up with this. And we don't even, even like to think of being associated with that. And then along comes the venue's partner or somebody who has a creative vision for how this thing should be changed. And he turns it into this. And then those of you who do live sound or recording in venues all know the bar where the bar manager's Uncle Judd Fudd, who's nearly deaf and almost always inebriated, came in and adjusted things for you. And when you hear the sound in that place, you just know you don't even want to be there, that you got this.
The bird we were just seeing?
Yep. That's what's left of the bird. And the rest is what the assault on your ears. When you really wanted that. So this is incremental degradation. And this is why we're paying attention to the details. And one of those big details is the sample rate conversion that JJ's just walked you through, and the filters and why they're so important. And when they're done right, your end product can be closer to this than to that. You don't want to be there. If you're there, it's hopeless. At least back here, you've got a chance of having someone like Steve here clean it up for you. So that said, aliasing. And by the way, I should let you know, this portion of the presentation will go a lot faster, so we probably don't even have 20, 30 minutes worth here. So if you're worried about time. What is this aliasing? We've talked about it a number of times. JJ said you don't want to have it. So let's try and visualize that. Here's a slide that I borrowed from, lifted from Tektronix in their TDS manual on how their oscilloscopes work in aliasing. And taking those same graphs that JJ talked about earlier, let's put our sample rate up here and our Nyquist frequency or Shannon frequency, the one half the sampling rate, right here. And let's say we have some signal that's got a number of harmonics to it, and that's this one. There's the harmonic, first harmonic, second, third,
looks
fourth.
Looks like a square wave.
Could be a square wave. But the point is, it has harmonics that are going to be above the Nyquist frequency. And if we don't filter these guys out, they alias back. They fold around the sample rate, and this one appears here. This next harmonic appears down here. This next one, it appears down here. And very slight movements here can cause large movements of these aliases with speed. What's that?
One other thing out. If you generate these harmonics in the digital domain, this happens. You can't filter them out. If you generate this in the digital domain after it's been sampled, you can't filter these out.
Yeah. So the importance of that low-pass filter when the conditions aren't having generated the signal in the digital domain, you're trying to get rid of this crap up here so it won't end up being additional things that you weren't counting on in your passband mucking up the noise floor and all the nice sounds that you were trying to work with. So we're going to actually hear an example of this. Everybody clear with this one? Okay, so at this point, we escape out of here, and I've got a digital audio workstation here all set up, and we've got a sine generator going to play here. It's playing right now, and it's producing this, 2,800 hertz tone, roughly. It's a single tone, and let's see what I have to do here to get the sound up. JJ, this guy's been set to the FM. How do I get it to set to what I want to play?
Push.
Yes. My ears, at least.
Let's see.
Oh, don't worry. The input, I've got a second attenuator in series.
Okay, there.
Just the sound guy. You can talk to sound. 2,800.
That's no, 10. That's 10 plus 10.
I hear nothing.
Okay. All right.
There you go.
Here's our little tone, right? Okay. I'm not going to let you make you suffer through that until I got the visual description taken care of. We're going to take this little tone, and we're going to just shift his pitch just a slight amount. You hardly see that move. Can you see it move on the screen? Okay, let's hear it moving, too. This is all we're going to be doing. It's just a little bit of... We're just going to move that little tiny bit. And I'm going to now add some harmonics to this thing. And I'm going to pass them through a process that does not have an appropriate low-pass filter. So we're going to see what's going to happen with those aliases. Let's bring that up and back up here. Okay. So here we go. Let's clean that up here. We want... the other one. Let's go the other way.
Manalyzer.
M-analyzer. It's a there we go. Okay. Here we have our fundamental, and here's our second harmonic, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh. Everything's not so bad there. Except the astute of you will notice that there's a real low frequency going on there. Appreciate JJ having a system that can do this. That's this guy down here. He's an alias. I haven't zeroed him out. I'm just leaving him there. Also, you should know that I am suppressing the fundamental and the harmonics pretty heavily with a tracking filter so that you're not having to suffer the pain of listening to those while we're going to listen for the muck that we're going to hear. So bringing this back up, let's watch it first, and then we'll bring that up. When I start playing my little game here, you'll notice this guy out here dancing around. This is one of the aliases that's really running wild there. And he's just, this higher harmonic up here, just beating ever so slightly against the Nyquist, is creating this huge shift in frequency down at the low end there. And you'll notice some others now dancing around as well, these little guys. These are all those aliases that we really don't want to have
and
mucking our sound.
Right?
I'm just subtly changing the pitch. Just
with cents and not even...
Yeah. Really. We're plus or minus 20 cents, roughly.
You're right on the edge, then, of that, what would be the... of your filter.
So I've designed this to beat against the Nyquist rate and without appropriate filtering. So we can just examine a single component. Earlier, JJ played for you a piece of music, and it had all kinds of stuff going on. We're breaking that down into just a single component here. So what's this sound like? I trust that's painful enough. I won't go any higher than that. And okay. So, now, that's just a single tone, and that single tone is just changing the pitch a little bit. Extrapolate that now to a complex sound, you know, the vocals, the instruments, all together, and let this happen across all those frequencies simultaneously. What do you think happens? You get all that crap that JJ played an example of earlier. It sounds terrible. So you don't want that to happen to your sound. So you're not going to do this, hopefully. You're going to find, if you're going to do sample rate conversion, you're going to do find sample rate converters that are up to the task that won't do this. So that set
us
up.
So how are you doing that? You actually have a digital resampling?
I have a chain that I've created. And we start with an oscillator. That's this this one to the right here. And then I have a limiter that has a special mode in there that you can take away the oversampling, filtering, and let it create harmonics, but also allow it to create aliases. And then I have this analyzer.
Why would anybody give you that option?
Well, when you're playing with synthesizers, for this demonstration it came in handy, but when you're playing with synthesizers, synthesized sound can sometimes use something like that.
Fatten it up or something? Fatten it up or
make it. I'd say a creative use of the sound. Okay. I wouldn't worry about fattening.
Artistic license.
Artistic use. And then further down that chain, this is the signals as you see them coming out of that process that doesn't have a low-pass filter on it. And then I'm using a thing called Surfer EQ. It's the only filter I found that allows tracking of the signal real-time. And you'll notice when I'm... if you look at this number up here, as I change the frequencies, you'll notice that it's tracking it. And I've set the filter up to be a notch filter to notch the fundamental and harmonics. And this guy, that's part of why you're hearing the harmonics or the alias is being exaggerated so much, because I'm notching the heck out of the fundamental and the harmonics. Otherwise, I'd be playing this and have to play the sound level so high and ask you to listen to the lower level muck, but your ears would hate the fundamental.
You're reducing it about 20 dB or so, the fundamental.
There's actually a second stage doing another 20.
Oh, there is?
Yeah.
And then, of course, the harmonics less, so you can hear them.
Exactly.
So you made that filter curve that told you to do that.
I acquired this tool and set it up to do this task.
That's cool. That's nice.
And that was precisely with the idea of then being able to bring up.
You want to get the baseline out of there.
Yeah, now you can see the result, how I brought up all these aliases so that they're much higher in amplitude with respect to the fundamental and the harmonics to make them more audible without having to go to painful ear examples here.
Thank you, Bob.
Sure. Okay.
And the Q4, while you're going through it.
The Q4?
What's the other two? Q4 and L2?
Okay, the Q4 was because I need a little extra help getting the high frequency up. You'll notice that they're set to have a Q that's reasonable right around the fundamental frequency, the 2780 hertz that I'm working with, and I'm staying pretty close to being within the notch as I'm going back and forth. But this one doesn't track, so I'm using the tracking filter to catch as much as I can, and then this one to just kill it a bit more. And then the L2 was only there, so if I make a mistake during this thing, I've got it set that it's not going to send a rude signal up to the sound system. I have been known to make mistakes live, and so so that's what it's there for. Any other questions on this before I move on? Okay.
This is Oops device.
Don't save that. All right. Back to our... This is where we were here. What is it? I do five here. Oh, that wasn't wrong. That was the wrong thing. All right. Go here. Show where we're from the current slide. There we are. Back to the show. All right. So, sample rate conversions take place everywhere. In fact, one of the current things I'm looking at is D-Day converters. All D-Day converters are not created equal. And I've been just checking how they perform. I've been doing a novel thing. I've been putting square waves into them and taking an oscilloscope and seeing what comes out. And I've got four different D-Day converters here that give you four different, very different outputs based on just feeding them with a square wave. They all have different filters implemented. It's hard to tell what they actually have depending based on the information from the product literature and even the user manuals, so I'm just guessing at what they're doing. But here is a particular D-Day converter that I think is using a linear phase filter, and that's a 20 hertz square wave, and you see the symmetry of the ringing of the filter. And if we blow that up, we zoom in a little bit, mm-hmm. you can see the pre-ring and the post-ring of the square wave. Okay, that's one D-to-A converter. And all these things are commercially available for Pro Audio. So which one of these?
So is this after it's become A?
Hmm?
Is this after the analog? This is a plot of the analog? Because it's not, you put just a square digital.
A digital square wave going in, and the oscilloscope's measuring what comes out to the point.
Okay,
and you would feed
your
sound.
This is the capture from the oscilloscope.
This is a, the, yes.
In the analog domain.
Picoscope.
Yeah, picoscope, and it's a special oscilloscope. It's not the, a typical oscilloscope usually has an 8 or a 10-bit A to D converter in front of it. And it makes it kind of hard to see this kind of phenomena here cleanly. I've got one, this particular one has a 16-bit A to D converter in the front end. It drops to 15 when you run two channels for reasons that I'm not completely clear on, but nonetheless, in this particular instance, we're running at 15 bits resolution, which now we're not dealing with the A to D converter sample noise. We actually see this little remainder of ripple that's coming off of the D to A converter's output. And yes, it's in the analog domain.
So that you're sure it's in the D to A and not the A to D of the picoscope?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Watch the next one. Well, if we go back one, you'll see here that there... If I brought up an example from an 8-bit, you'd see immediately the difference between the noise. There would be little bits, toggles, going all up and down through at this resolution. So
that's
here's,
an alias square wave, because in the digital domain it has infinite... harmonics.
Your guess is as good as mine.
Step.
Here is the step response to what I'm thinking is a minimum phase. Mm-hmm. And you'll notice that this one has nothing before the transition. It's all after. And if you argue with the audiophiles, they'll say they can hear this difference, this one versus this one.
So that first one, since it has pre-ringing, is there some sort of FIR filter on it? Or
yeah. Yeah, they're all FIR filters, but they're all designed differently.
But it has to be an FIR filter to have the pre-ringing.
Mm-hmm.
Is that true?
Okay. And here is the minimum phase. Let's look at it. Notice how at the transition here, there is no pre-ringing whatsoever, but nothing came for free. Notice how the post-ringing is a lot larger than... in our previous example there. Mm-hmm. In fact, this one, they've tried very hard to limit this pre- and post-ringing to get as close to a perfect square wave as possible.
And this is at 20K?
No,
20 hertz.
It's a 20 hertz, but that's a good point. It's a 44-100 system. So it's a 44 kilohertz sampled output, and this is what we're getting out. And I'm using 20 hertz... partly because I also want to know what the low frequency response of the DDA is. Is there a capacitor in the path? There's no capacitor in the path on this one. You can tell that it's not drooping down. And none of these will. Well, that might not be true. We'll find out. So a lot more post-ringing on this particular DDA converter. Here's one that's what I'm going to call a hybrid. Remember when JJ said you can just move the poles and zeros around, you get different types of filters? This may be what they're doing. You'll see that there's a very little pre-ring, but a bit more post-ring. And why you see a slight difference, I'm measuring the left and right channels simultaneously, so those two previous examples really had good left and right channel match. This one's not quite as good because the left channel is just a little offset from the right one. But you notice a very little pre-ringing, a lot more post-ringing. And here's the second hybrid. These guys have a bit more overshoot than the very first one, but very little ring going on. Four different DACs. Which one's the right one?
I just have a quick question. You're talking about DACs. Are these like commercial DACs, or are these like eval boards for the actual chips? I'm not sure what you're...
No, these are... You can go buy these off the shelf and put them on your computer, and you have a D-to-A converter running...
So this is like
all
USB or something?
Yeah, all of these were done with USB, but I have a collection of these things done with what's the Toslink input, what's the SPDIF, the AES EBU. Although when it comes to the output, that's not going to change. You know, if we're looking at jitter, we might. That's a but that's not today's topic anyway.
Is most of the discrepancy in this between the right and left just a volume, because one of them is up a tiny bit louder than the other?
Yes, there's an offset between them.
Yeah, okay.
How well do the two match, especially when you're talking a DC-coupled system? That's kind of important. So,
is this a DC-coupled?
All four of these were DC-coupled on their output.
Yeah, really? They're not audio D to A's?
No, they're audio D to A's.
Are they? They're DC coupled, huh?
And they're DC coupled.
Oh, very handy.
I should
find out what those are. Could be useful.
Yeah, I've been really measuring a whole slew of them, and about half of them fall into they've got a capacitor on the output, and half of them have a DC coupled. Might be a slow servo on it. Okay, so JJ, you still awake? Always like to keep my audience riveted. Okay, we're at the sample rate conversion examples. And I'd like JJ to explain this thing to you.
This is from Pandora, right?
Yeah, this is from Octave. Okay, before I make him do that, JJ wrote a script to evaluate the performance of sample rate converters. We're going to bring that up. We're going to bring up several things. We need to have a script open. What's a script look like? I'm going to use... JJ uses MATLAB. He was using Octa before he finally got somebody to either buy him a MATLAB or he sprung for it himself. I'm not sure which.
Paul.
Huh?
Thank you, Paul.
4896. That's a good script to have. So whether it's MATLAB or Octave, there's these things, scripts that are basically the commands that you would type in yourself if you wanted to type them in. But I don't know about you, but I'm not going to type that command in every time to do one of these demos for you guys. So what you would normally do is create your script, change directories to the place where you've got both the data and the script, and you just type the data, and it would pop out some result. Since we're going to be changing the source information, you'll notice that one of the things that is a key in here is this pointer to the WAV file that we're going to operate on. And I don't want to have to type a new one in each time. So I've got a script that says we're going to use this source. JJ created the source called BIST4896. And this particular script is then going to take and look at the output of the conversion that we did on this WAV file. We would take this WAV file to a particular digital audio workstation or sample rate converter like SOX or you see them on the market, the Ultimate Audio Converter. And we would then take this particular waveform, this particular source file that he produced, put it in, do the sample rate conversion, take the output, and that output is what I'm now about to analyze for you using this script. And we're going to have that set to go. And we'll get Octave going here, and we'll see one of these outputs live. Okay, let's go and look at Cool Edit Pro's ability to handle that transition. So there we go. We just ran it live in front of you in Octave. You've got to have a pretty potent computer to not have this take off. You try to do this on, say, a laptop with an Atom processor and only a couple of gig of memory, you're going to be a long while waiting for it to produce results. So, JG.
So what you see here is a... It helps if you put up the original signal, too. But what you see here is a signal that the way it should be. You see it basically, it started off at 48. So you see it rolling off before 2400 and then zero when you get it up to 96. You don't, you know, that's down, what, from 10 to the 5 down to 10 to the minus 1. That's down 110 dB. So that's the kind of thing you should see.
So the original material had content up to this point, and there shouldn't be anything above our Nyquist there. And so we've converted to a 96 kilosample per second. and we should have nothing, no junk in this area right here. And if we look at it, Cool Web Pro does a pretty good job.
Which one's the input? Green.
There isn't an input on that.
What's the what are the two colors?
The two colors are left and right.
Left and right channel.
Ah, oh, okay. Right.
Yeah. Sorry.
And is this thing up and around 80K just an anomaly of the you missing the graphics?
Yeah. What's this?
Oh, that's just the plotting thing.
Yeah.
The plotting. I put this in here. This is the end of the 48 kilohertz that has been upsampled to 96. But yeah, the plotting will mirror the thing. Okay.
So how?
Let's take a look at oriented. This should be our passband here. You should see something that's representative of fairly high levels of signal, and then when we get above the Nyquist, it should be fairly well suppressed. Okay.
I point out there's a very steep filter too.
Yes, this and we were talking earlier. This one is probably a sample rate conversion filter that would take quite a while if you were running it live. So this would have a huge delay. You wouldn't want to use this in a real-time situation. But for in use in a digital audio workstation, or your everyday, hey, I've got to change the sample rate conversion to drop into this video that I'm doing, you're not worried about did it take 1 second or 10 seconds in its delay going through there. All you care about is it did it really well. If you're worried about running real-time and you're having to do the sample rate conversion on the fly in a live venue, you might not pick this filter.
It might sound more like an echo.
Yes. Let's change and have a look at the other end of this spectrum. And NCH is a commercially available product. They make a thing called WavePad. And the WavePad has some features in it for doing editing that look remarkably similar to Cool Edit Pro, which is hard to come by.
Sorry.
But their sample rate conversions are, what's that word, JJ?
Special. A couple things to point out. First, you notice there's a ripple in the filter here. See, that should be monotonically decreasing until you hit the filter. There's a ripple in the filter here. And then there's all that stuff, which just doesn't belong there. And if you blow up the stuff down here, you find, if you blow up the stuff down here, down below here, you find more junk intermixed with the original signal, too.
In other words, use this one at your own peril. If you were doing it for a creative purpose, that'd be one thing. But if you're trying to preserve the quality of the recording that you had to begin with, this is a bad choice. I wouldn't do it.
So because of the visual, the way it's displayed, it probably looks like the blue is the one channel is pretty much the same as the green. It's just favoring to see the green on top.
Yeah, it's left and right channels are intermixed there.
What was the original sample rate?
Yeah, the original one. How low did it go right after 24 kilohertz?
Well, the original was at 48, and it was created with a script that builds it right out to 24.
I meant the first example with Cool Edit Pro. This is down to 10 to the first. Was Cool Edit Pro an order of magnitude better?
Cool Edit Pro was down. The bottom is about the same. The problem is that peak in the middle, which has You remember we were talking about half band filters?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. See the problem here.
What this means?
That's what that means.
Like, and so you remember your aliases? Remember that wild one that would go down to DC?
Yeah.
Oh, those that they're making the woofers work really hard on something that's not even there.
Yeah.
This well, it's have that notch, that little zero part right below the peak. Like your original half-band filter.
So
inserting ones.
Let's have a look at.
I wonder if the DC level was higher on that as well.
Mm. Now, we're going to make all this stuff available so that you'll be able to play with this to your heart's content. We'll put the source. Mm. JJ will put the source WAV file out there. I'll put these scripts in the place that you can get to them. Octave. There's another thing that you need to know if you were at the last presentation I did with JJ. We told you about how to install Octave and which version to get and all that.
Read the video. Don't get the latest version because it don't work.
Yeah. And so there's on the AES website, there's a another presentation I did, a small mini presentation I did that says which version of Octave to get and how to install it, and how to make sure you got the right packages installed so you too can do what I'm doing right here.
So and, the newest version of Octave isn't very good, huh?
Well, it's not that it's not very good. You got to remember that Octave is a open source thing that people are working on. And for instance, precedence of operators in a complex operation may change in certain packages, and you need to know that. Well, what was the one that you ran into, JJ, when you were doing the design there? That
there's the way. There's the thing to read the WAV file, and Octave has. In Octave, you say, when you write a WAV file, you say variable name, bit depth, sampling rate, file name. In MATLAB, you say sampling rate, bit depth. Thanks.
So if you don't get the order of the variables that you're passing correct, you're not going to get what you're expecting. And that's the order of variables. Then there's the order of operator precedence, and while you immediately think add, subtract, multiply, divide, there are complex operators. And this gets into the complex operators, whether the complex plus, complex minus, you know, which one is in what order. And so you can get results, but those results vary considerably from what you should have gotten. But when you're playing with this for the first time, you don't know whether you've gotten the right answer or not. You're trusting the tool to work right. So it's important to get the right version so that the script that has written here
works.
Will behave as intended and give you results that you can trust.
Otherwise, you're going to change it a little bit.
You might, yes. So let's have a look at... There's a commercial one out there called SOX. I forget what it stands for. It's also a free... Sound Something Exchange,
that's
I think.
Old, Sound Exchange. That's an old program.
And
I thought that was open source, too.
It is.
Yeah. So, how does it behave on this very same task? That's not the right answer.
Nope.
We're in the wrong directory. Yeah. Okay. Yes, it did look. You know what? I'm going to skip down for a moment because I think there's a problem with that directory. I'm going to do Audacity like I was going to in the first place. And there. This is Audacity.
Oh.
As I was looking at the. Directory looking at, I think I have a problem in it, so I might have the wrong results in that directory. And this one's not too bad. It's not quite as good as the CoolEdit Pro, in my opinion, but that's my opinion. You'll notice the roll off here is a little sooner and slower. Probably runs faster. Any comments, JJ?
Probably has considerably less latency.
Yeah,
I have a couple also at the end of my slide deck. I actually show when you're done if you want. I blew up the inside of this a bit, a couple of places, and I can show that afterwards.
Okay. Well, this is pretty much this is pretty much the end of my portion of it. So
in the worst case, the other one that we're looking at.
Oh, the NCH?
Yeah.
Don't use it for...
What would we hear?
It depends on what you put into it. That's part of the problem.
So it's content variable.
Mm-hmm.
And it might not be so bad, and you might get surprised. Actually, you know, we forgot to do the door prizes after break. So why don't we do, if after Bob's done, why don't we do door prizes? I'll set up and I'll show a couple of the blown up graphs. I'll show you what some of the other problems with NCH.
Okay. Anything else you... I would like to see what went wrong with the SOX, although if you'll see if I went in the wrong directory, or do I have the wrong results?
Maybe it's a subdirectory. What was that?
There we go.
There we go.
That
That's Sox.
Same as the,
it's pretty close to Audacity.
But you notice that that doesn't get down quite as far. It's a little bit shorter filter, so the rejection up above 24 is a little less, but not a lot less. It's, you know, and it's well behaved. It doesn't do stuff, if you understand what I mean.
That stuff that you saw up here in the NCA.
Yeah, doesn't have any of that stuff that suggests there's a half depth.
No, you gave it this original white noise.
No, this is a file. You have the file. We can just put it up on the thing. It's a file that consists of a bunch of anharmonic tones.
You know,
it's a wide spectrum.
You just don't want to use Sox if your source material is in floating point, which would be pretty rare because.
It doesn't do floating point?
It does do floating point, but it treats the positive half of the waveform with a different conversion than the lower half.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very nice.
You mean the negative?
Well, because in fixed point, you never reach positive one, but you can reach negative one.
Yes.
In floating point, when people generate their sine waves, they include positive one and negative one. So the author of Sox said, we should make sure to convert the upper half so that positive one becomes slightly less, but for the negative half we don't have to do that. And well, I argued until with this open source guy until I realized that
I've had this debate with the people that made Octave. The original version of, they have now fixed it, but the original wave read you'll get if you grab it does the wrong gain. So that you won't, it maps everything from minus one to plus one. It does it linearly, but it maps it from minus one to plus one. So if you're trying to look at quantizer occupancies, you get these weird crap. And I actually put it up on their board and reported it as a bug, and had like 8 computer scientists tell me I didn't know what I was talking about. Then somebody showed up and basically went boo, and they all went away, and they fixed it. I don't know who it was. Somebody, it must have been their overseer in the computer science world, showed up and basically went, boo.
This guy knows what he's talking about.
Yeah.
Go away.
I'll just like, so like, he sent me the right code and he's easily demonstrated why it's right. Be quiet.
So Bob, to answer your question, this is the file, the source file that JJ's created. It looks like this. If you take a standard digital audio workstation and look at the frequency response that you're going to see there, this is what you'll see. And if you go in and want to see something like a smaller portion of this whole signal, it looks like that.
Is it safe to play?
No.
No.
You don't want to listen to that. It was meant to. It was built for testing sample rate converters. It was not intended for human consumption.
I can play it really low.
I've heard music like that.
Yeah.
Well,
master music like that.
That's what it looks like after the mastering.
Okay.
Oh, geez, yes.
Let's make sure I'm talking to the right thing here, and we need that. Okay. We'll start out real low. Okay.
That's what it sounds like.
I like that.
Yeah, I remember that.
It just doesn't sound right, does it?
Well, I don't know. That could be
like
useful.
What?
Sounds like a loose ground.
50 hertz tone.
If you dance slow.
But it's not what it is, yes.
Yeah. Could be useful as a synthesizer source.
I guess.
Okay.
Let's play it to telemarketers.
Yes! What I want on my phone is the 10KV button that you can push when the telemarketer's calling.
Yes.
Please hold.
Only 10?
Please hold.
This is my
holding. I'm sorry. The number you have reached is a working number. If you wish to sell me something, please hang up and dial 0. Click.
Dial 911.
Has been changed to 3.
Well, the thing is, I get these things, the little pause, and somebody says, hello, I am from Microsoft. And my answer is, Computer Security Institute, may I help you? And then all you hear is click.
I don't know. I just answer with Homeland Security.
I don't want somebody to blame you for imitating a law enforcement, so yeah. I just say, computer, sir.
Okay, that's in a mind.
Okay, so why don't you do... I'll hook mine back up while you do the...
I have a question.
Yes?
Have you examined the SRCs on the web at infinitewave.ca?
No, but you can get active and try it. No, but if you hum a few bars, sorry. Hey, now, I have a couple of plots. I'm gonna go through this way too fast. What you want to do is you want to find out what your SRC does. You remember back I did an FFT workshop about 3 or 4 years ago? That has a way to actually calculate frequency response. Just do it. Just follow that script. See what comes out. I mean, that will tell you very quickly whether you like it or not. Okay. What do we do? Oh, well, I'm going backwards. That's why it doesn't make sense. And here's the script. Here's the script. Bob made it fancy. This is the thing that generates the signal. This will be on the website so you can get it.
Will it be on the test?
Absolutely. Oh, okay. And you'll have to explain exactly why those numbers were chosen. Okay. And this now shows... That's the spectrum of the signal as generated. And this is a close-in of the detail of it. So this is just a little piece of the spectrum. So basically that's what it looks like. It's a whole bunch of lines. It's all lines, but it's a whole bunch of lines.
Did you do it that way so that you can see the...
Well, they're monharmonic lines so that no matter what you do, if something aliases, it's going to fall between them. And why did we do that? Well, let's see. You shove it through an SRC and see what comes out. So I forget which one this, but you understand we call this resampler A+. You notice that there's the pass band is monotonic, the stop band nice and low, and there's no stuff. And then there's the other one that I call resampler and zoomed in, you know, so there's no crud in there. See a little difference in the two channels, which is interesting but meaningless ultimately because of the level. Now we put now that's what you want to see. Okay, now we call this one resampler F- as opposed to A+. I don't name products, but you probably know what it is by now. Passband ripple, unfiltered images. This was 48 to 88, which looks even worse than 48 to 96. This is an example.
I forgot to bring that one up.
Yeah, this is an example of what you don't do. And not only does it look terrible in the stop band, what the hell is that? I'm sorry. You know, that's just, what?
A mess.
This is what you don't want to see in your stop band. And I don't really know how to generate this. I can't even tell you what they did wrong. I don't know how to do this.
It sounds warm.
Probably louder, but I don't know exactly what happens here, but if you see this, I suggest you switch.
So those articles that recommend that you sample at 88-200 because it's going to be better sample rate conversion, if you use the wrong sample rate converter,
it's true.
It's really worse.
Well, no, this is 88, this is 48 to 88.
Oh, 48 to 88.
You know, 2-to-1 might, but if you, as you saw, they didn't do too well on 48 to 96.
Okay.
But at least they didn't have this stuff in 48 to 96. And 48 to 88 is just
What if you take these good SRCs and do it a whole bunch of times back and forth and all these different ones?
What you see is you'll see the noise. You'll see the noise floor go up, and you'll see the roll off around the transition band get worse. But when you don't see this kind of stuff, it's not going to show up later. I'm really not sure what would happen if you put this through a half a dozen passes.
There would no longer be gaps.
I'm not really sure.
Put it through the good SRC, then what?
Well, how do you, at this point, define good?
The one that
you've put a gun to its head and pulled the trigger. Now what? I mean,
yeah, it becomes a question of what's its point of reference.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, maybe the stuff is screwed up in the.
You remember, E sub naught never goes away; it just gets worse.
Yeah.
It's additive.
Yeah.
It's never subtracted.
But this is the part that really scared me about this. This is down in audible range here.
Yeah,
and
that's what you're stuck with. You put it politely,
it'll be stuff. Yes. Well, it's one letter longer than what I was thinking. But that's about all I can say is, So, just wanted to show you some of that bone stuff. So now we downsample. This is one of them. And this is, well, this is actually both of the, this is actually both of them for the downsample. Now, you notice doing downsample, there's no funny stuff in the middle here. Over there, what do you notice over there?
Funny stuff.
What? Well, the notch is okay because that's just at half the sampling rate. That part's not the problem. But if you notice, see that other stuff in there? And you notice it doesn't roll off, it rolls off very slowly, but okay, it's got low latency at least. But you notice that other stuff in the middle now. If you take a look, this is when you zoom in. Which one of those do you think is right? These are... What? The one on the right is correct. The one on the... What? Yeah, again, it's definitely odd.
Monkeys
so,
and graph paper.
What?
Monkeys and graph paper.
Mm-hmm. Something. I don't know.
If you know how to do it, just get a bunch of monkeys, give them graph paper.
And wait and see. Yes. So, the signal generator, you can, at least in MATLAB, you can tell it to put out 24-bit or you can tell it to put out 32-bit float. And you can stuff the stuff into... The different converters, you can suck it back in at the same resolution into MATLAB at least. And you can try all this stuff. But the answer is load the stuff, you know, load Octave on one of your computers, play with it, try it. It's a little bit of work to get it going, but two things will happen. One, you'll know what your system's doing, and the other one is you'll start to understand the math because it goes right in your face like this and goes. And if you have MATLAB, you can also do things like zoom in deep into the signal by using the zoom and pan functions in the MATLAB graphing, which does not work, unfortunately, in Octave. So you can pan in and look and get some of these details. So. There, that's basically the whole message. You can get this. You can do this in freeware, and you can find out what's happening.
JJ, I have a question.
Rosebud.
That's pre-echo or premonition.
Yeah.
Bit depth. How does that affect the whole process? Is it just that?
Well, you would want to filter with more rejection for higher bit depth. So that means a longer filter for higher bit depth.
More rejection.
Meaning you would want more stop band attenuation.
Instead of 100 dB, you want 120.
Yeah.
So if you didn't use a ample bit depth, would it just mean that the outcome of the process would just have a higher noise floor?
Well, it would mean that you'd have aliasing above the LSB.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah. And it's still not all necessarily totally tragic. If it's down 96 dB, you're not doing terribly, but still you would like... The more bit depth, the longer the filter, basically. I mean, that's the trick. Well, you know, I wonder, can I do that on this? Here. Pardon me, I just turned on MATLAB. Give us 5 minutes. This is not a rocket. This is not a rocket ship like Bob's machine. Oh, no, that's Mammoth Hot Springs up there.
That's what I thought.
That's Mammoth Hot Springs. That's the one down by the lower walkway.
Yeah.
You shot that, right?
Yeah, I shot that. What version, what? Recent. I think this is actually the most recent because I just loaded it. And it's the one where they took out WaveWrite, so we are very stubborn. They want you to use audio read and audio write, so you have to set up great big bloody structures so that you can write half a dozen other things that nobody ever uses. So we just took the code for wave read and wave write, and we stuck it back in the bin.
So,
enough said.
JJ?
Yeah?
Whoever created MATLAB thinks it's worth a lot, don't they?
Oh, yeah, it's about $5,000.
Yeah.
I don't know, Paul?
Yeah,
How much was it?
Yeah.
Something like 5K.
Well, that doesn't give you the DSP toolkit either.
No.
Well, I guess it depends.
It started out as that. Lin.
It starts out as.
What do they call it?
Oh, Linpack is expensive.
That was part of it.
Yeah. Oh, now it's all parts. You have to get not MATLAB. You also have to get the signal processing toolbox, the audio toolbox, the filter design toolbox, the chalice from the palace, the belt with the pulleys, and you know.
What are they worth?
Ka-ching.
Yes.
I think last time I.
Yes, you got exactly. You keep pulling the lever.
The older ones would work.
Yes.
Clive Moeller.
Did it come up yet?
He called me once. I found a bug.
Clive Moeller.
Clive Moeller.
I know. Well, you know where MATLAB came from was came from Linpack, from the Fortran Linpack. That's where it started.
Mm-hmm.
It was somebody made an interactive shell to feed Linpack, which is a great idea. And that turned into a commercial product, and it's all polished and nice, but it's a very limited market, and they like to stay in business.
You're at college.
It looks like you're launched.
Finally. So I'm going to move this over here. That's what MATLAB looks like. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to show you what I'm talking about with the filter link. Okay? I'm going to do a 64-tap filter. Making it a tight, a very tight pass band. A very tight transition band. All right, now that goes and wait.
Oop, no, no.
Now it's going to sit there and think for a minute.
Input, I think.
What? Okay, and I generated a filter, and in a second we will see the. I don't know why plotting on this laptop takes forever and a day, as you can tell. There you go. So that's the filter I made. You know, it's not a great filter, but it gives you an idea. Now, if I try to get that down from minus 35 dB down to maybe, minus 50 dB, park this, and now I can do the same thing. We'll just, that's just a random number, but we'll make it 164 taps.
Okay.
Least number of keystrokes.
Yes, least number of keystrokes. Minimizing keystrokes and.
A minimal keystroke.
Oh, that's new. It comes up with a list of your old commands.
Yes, it does.
That's new.
Okay, where's my freaking cursor? There.
Cursors.
Here, cursor. And now it came up faster because it was obviously a lot of. Now you notice, if you look, now instead of being down 35 dB, now it's down 75. And if you look at this, now this is the part that's handy that you can't do an octave. Say we want to look at this, the passband here. We do this. And now you notice we're zooming way in here. Eventually, you will start to see ripple. Now you see ripple, but that's not a whole lot of ripple. And, you know, 164 wasn't long enough here, so, you know, if you wanted to make this I don't know exactly how far it would need to be, but what? So now we've got a little bit of, that was a little bit too much. So you see, now we're down at about 110 dB, so that's like 18 bits worth. So you need to see how the filter length affects it. Now, there are things you can do that this is what people used to do. You remember some words about that. You can do things like you can weight the pass band and the stop band differently. No. So now what I can do is I can weight the pass band and stop band differently. So I'm going to make a weight of 0.01 in the pass band and 1 in the stop band. So that means that we're not paying attention to the pass band ripple nearly as much. So now what happens? Well, oh, that was the wrong button. Okay. And now the thing that's interesting is that doing that on a computer the first time using MATLAB took 20 minutes. So as bad as this computer is, instantaneous is a lot better than 20 minutes. And we'll plot this one. And of course it will come up on my main screen again. Never mind where I want it.
Does the command FIRPM always create linear phase
filters? It's what it does.
That's okay.
Well, there are some other things you can do, but it's mostly that. Now you notice we're down 130 dB. So you see we made it go down 130 dB. But where does this what does this do? We didn't look at the other one, but now if you look here, we will still see some, ripple, although the way I did it, you're not going to see terrible ripple because it's still a ridiculously long filter. So this is actually a reasonable filter for this application. This is a reasonable filter. The other one would be down another factor of 10. Another 10 dB down. The ripple would be 10 dB down in the other longer filter I made there. But you get 30 dB, you get plus 10 dB in a stop band, minus 10 dB in the pass band, more or less, but not quite. This is the kind of thing you do when you're trying to develop a filter. And just if you wonder what the filter looks like, this is a time domain plot of the filter. Got to get far enough over there to find the... And that's what the filter response looks like. Mm-hmm. So that's how you do this stuff, you know. And just that the arguments I put in the last one will generate any of the filters you need. And if you can do almost the same thing. Ramez works the same in Octave. So you can always... You can sit down there and play with filter design all you want in Octave and... You just can't zoom in on the plots. But on the other hand, FreakZ and Octave plots the stop band and the pass band separately, which is handy because that way you can actually see what's going on in the pass band without fooling with it.
Hey, JJ?
Yeah?
In Octave, are the plots exportable?
You can export them as JPEG, I think, but I got
you
better results.
You can't export the data itself.
No.
So you can replot it.
I got better results in Octave by just being all obnoxious and doing a screen copy. So I just did a screen, what?
Screen print.
Screen print. Print screen and suck it into Photoshop. That's how I got it. So I think that's basically about it. But that's the kind of tools that you want to do. Notice I shot it. It takes a while. Here, the poor laptop recovering. This is puny memory in this laptop. It's got 3 megs. So one too many screens.
Puny is how much?
Well, it'd be nice to have 8.
That's a 4.
That's what?
How many RAM?
3.
3?
What,
i3? i3. No, it's not even a Pentium. It's a core. It's an i5. It's an i5. It's like a 1.5 megahertz i5. It's kilohertz. Not megahertz.
Gigahertz?
Yeah. Gigahertz, yes. Kilohertz. Gigahertz, not kilohertz. No, the first computer I used MATLAB on was more like 200 kilohertz, but yes. That was a long time ago. That was a data... What? Well, you could almost... I'll tell you, when you decided to seek from one end of this to the other, you could almost hear the beads clacking, yes. I mean...
Thank you, JJ.
Okay. So that's it.